Welcome to the In the Pen podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I am joined, as always, by Rick Graham. Rick, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. Doing well, you know, happy to be back after a missed week. But, yeah, excited to get back into the swing of things here.
Awesome. Yeah, we missed you last week, but now we've got Callan missing this week, so I'll be hosting. I know it's going to be hard for the regulars to hear my voice as often as Callan's beautiful voice is usually there, but I think they'll be able to survive one episode. But this week, we've got an interesting bit of stuff that we're going to talk over, mostly the regular stuff, three up, three down, some injuries, news, and notes, and then we're just going to look at some leaderboards in terms of how relievers are doing in a bunch of different statistics. So we should get a few interesting names that pop up here and there that we can discuss in depth and hopefully find some diamonds in the rough, as well as identifying the guys that you can sort of trust throughout the season and maybe some guys who are untrustworthy in sort of that same fashion. So as always, we're going to kick it off with the injuries and transactions from around the league. And it's the unfortunate reality that Pete Fairbanks has once again hit the IL. He's on the 15-day IL with left hip inflammation. Rick, do you have any information on this? How long do you expect him to be out? Who's going to fill in? Is this like sort of a death sentence for him now that it's the second time already and he's a guy with a very extensive injury history?
I can hear the Callan just, you know, visibly upset right now, wherever he is tonight. But it's so weird because it's not like when I first heard that he was, you know, coming out from the bullpen with the trainer, I'm like, oh, it's got to be like an arm thing or, you know, something didn't feel right in his arm, and it ended up being his hip, which I don't know if that's something he's had in his history. It just seems like every sort of injury has happened to him. And it's just, you know, the hip injury in itself it seems like it's fairly mild, but the fact that he just can't keep all, like, there's always something going on. It just seems like, and it's, you know, time. You know, Jason Adam has been a little bit, he's been a little rough this month, but when he was filling in for him, he had seven saves and pitched well in the closer role. So as far as, you know, saves only leagues go, yeah, it might, if you have the IL spot to hold on to Fairbanks, obviously it's worth a shot. But if you don't have an IL spot, if he's just like burning a roster spot right now, I don't think you have to hold on at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's pretty clear that Jason Adam is going to be filling in as the closer, though since Fairbanks hit the IL, I think the two saves since then have been split between Adam and Jalen Beeks. Is that why you have him so low in your rankings at 23?
Yeah, it's, you know, Adam hasn't been as good as he was last year. And yeah, it's still, while he did see the bulk of the save chances the last time Fairbanks was on the IL, it's yeah, it's still the Rays, and I just want to just see how things play out there, because they do like, you know, mixing and matching, and they have those lefties who are not very good, but they're, you know, they still like to use them in save situations, you know, Beeks, Poche, and I just don't think Adam is really, you know, even when Fairbanks came back, this bullpen isn't really intriguing to me right now with just the way those two guys were pitching or are pitching and just the whole Rays-ness of it.
Yeah, that's very fair. So I think there's definitely some opportunity for him to move up the ranks in general if he sort of, it's clear that he's the go-to guy, but, you know, considering the Rays history and considering that Jason Adams not really at the same level he was at last year when he was like in the running for top five reliever in baseball, I think it's fair that he needs to have some room to grow in terms of rankings. We also saw two other guys hit the IL with very similar injuries. They're both set up men on good teams, and that's Luis Garcia of the Padres hitting the 15-day IL with a left oblique strain, and Matt Moore hitting the same day IL with a right oblique strain. what's impacted here? I mean, clearly the hold situation is going to be the thing that changes most here, but I think both of these teams have a lack of depth in their mm-hmm. bullpen. And I'm wondering who's going to be the first guy to step up, because I think Matt Moore was the top guy in Anaheim and Luis Garcia was up there with like Steven Wilson and Nick Martinez. So who do you think is the biggest benefactor in both of these bullpens?
Yeah, Moore is definitely a bigger loss, I think, because he was the guy in front of Estevez. And, you know, oblique strains are tricky. They're no fun. They're, you know, they're never a minimum IL stay for the most part. So this is going to be, it's going to be interesting to see what the Angels do. I think, yeah, with the Padres, they still have Nick Martinez and Steven Wilson. But it does really thin out after those two guys. And then the Angels, you know, obviously they called up Ben Joyce. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that a little bit more later. But, Tapera and Loop just did not work out. They're not pitching well mm-hmm. this year. It's Tapera's really
not even on the team anymore.
Yeah, those guys. And I mean, I can't imagine Aaron Loop's going to be around for much longer either. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're calling up not just Joyce, but Sam Bachman. They're calling, you know, mm-hmm. they're going with these rookies from Double A just to kind of, you know, hope that they can fill innings. And at some point you got to think that they're going to, you know, have to go out and make a move, even if it's a minor move, just to get like a major league decent arm in that bullpen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does open up an opportunity for someone like Ben Joyce if he can, you know, stay healthy and throw strikes.
For sure. And then I think it also in LA, it makes a lot of room for Chris Devensky to sort of be that top veteran guy there, because he's been quietly having his best season ever, especially if you look at ERA estimators like XFIP. He's at 2.80, which would be a career best. He's done that across 16 and two-thirds innings. He's pumping 94 miles per hour. He's getting really lucky. He's got a 179 BABIP, but like I said, that XFIP sort of supports that. Is this mm-hmm. some guy that you in Save Plus Holds leagues are looking for? He has yet to walk anybody yet as well.
Yeah, I you know, now looking through some of the numbers we're going to talk about later, and like he's on a lot of these leaderboards, and I probably, you know, it's 16 inning sample size after all that he hasn't really been valuable anywhere since like what was mm-hmm. it 2019, so yeah, I'm a little bit maybe 18 17. It's a little bit skittish, but yeah, I mean the numbers back up what he's been doing. So I think, yeah, you know, if he puts up another really good week here, I think he'll jump up a lot in the rankings and the holds rankings next week. But yeah, I think he, you know, I'm sure they'll trust him over Ben Joyce at this point. So yeah, he's mm-hmm. probably the top holds guy at the moment.
That's fair. And then in San Diego, just diving a little deeper, I mean, I think Steven Wilson and Nick Martinez are obvious risers, but Tom Cosgrove is sort of an interesting name right now. He's gone 9 scoreless innings throughout to start his career. Is that somebody that you're putting on your radar as somebody that if they continue the success that he's been having, is that somebody you're going to be adding on to the holds ranking sometime soon?
Yeah, definitely could be. I mean, it's an intriguing arm. I think, yeah, I mean, they're so banged up right now that he might work his way, because, you know, usually, typically there's three or so guys, especially on a good team, mm-hmm. considering, I'll consider the Padres a good team, even though they're, you know, haven't really hit their stride yet, but
yeah,
you know, you can usually depend on three guys and holds leagues. So yeah, he could sneak into, you know, behind Martinez and why am I playing Steven Wilson? He could probably sneak mm-hmm. into you know, some holds relevance. And, you know, even if he just keeps pitching this well, he's definitely got some value and mm-hmm. In leagues, because yeah, we'll take the ratios.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Cosgrove is a 26-year-old lefty that relies on his slider 60% of the time. It's a pretty good one, but I think he'll need a larger sample size to convince both of us that he's somebody that's going to be interesting in a wide array of leagues. But those are the only three injuries we have. So we can move to the transactions. And this is where things get a lot more positive. As we saw Liam Hendricks return for the White Sox, he was activated from the 15-day IL after a long fight with lymphoma. It's great to see him back. Where does he land on your rankings immediately now that he's back?
So this is a tough one because I had him a little bit higher, and then I, you know, I watched the inning he pitched and the velo's down, and it's yeah, I mean, it's kind of to be expected. And I do wonder if, you know, I love that he's back. I love that, like, he's just such a great energy. Just like, I love everything about him. Wonder if it might have been pushed a little bit too quickly because there wasn't much of a ramp up period. I mean, he had a couple, I don't know, originally the timetable was like sometime in June or like early July, and now it's, you know, late May and he's already back, which is great. But yeah, I think we just got to be patient with him. So I have him at 12 right now because, you know, I don't want to push him down too far because of what the upside is there. If he's right, and I, you know, I think he is, you know, essentially an RP1 for, you know, for a team. So yeah, it's going to be tricky the next couple of weeks. You know, just something to monitor with him is, you know, obviously velocity, command, just, you know, ability to pitch back to back days. If all that stuff starts trending in the right direction, then he'll probably keep moving up and get back into the top five or six.
Yeah, and that top 10 is really hard to crack right now. I mean, if Camilo Duvall is outside of it, then it's going to be pretty tough for anybody to jump in there. But another transaction we had was one that you hinted at, and that was Sam Bachman and Ben Joyce being selected from the minors by the Angels. Both of these guys are top prospects on the team. Joyce was drafted just last year and did not pitch too much in the minors, considering he's a reliever, right? So he doesn't get as many options, but it took a while for, it didn't take long for him to make his debut. The guy throws 100 miles per hour with ease. He was the team's number 9 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. And then you have Bachman, who's the team's number 4 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. And that's a guy who's come up as a starter, but the team is currently rocking like a 6-man rotation, and Bachman couldn't crack that. So he's going to come up and be a reliever. And so far he's only pitched a couple of games, but I think they'll both be interesting and in different kinds of ways. I think with the way that the Angels bullpen is right now, I don't think Joyce is going to be factoring into saves, but he could be a really great holds option. And then Bachman sort of has that ability to go multiple innings, which I love in a multitude of leagues. So who is more interesting for you right now? Who's somebody that you're looking to pick up, and how fantasy relevant do you think either of these guys can be?
Yeah, I mean, they also called up a while ago Chase Silseth, another one of their top prospects. So it's just, yeah, they're just kind of throwing these prospects at a wall, at the kind of like what the Angels do in a way too as well. And the Angels have had success, or not Angels, the Braves.
That's who we're talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about the Braves. Yeah, they've been doing that too, and it's had some. They've had success with it. So, I think, you know, if you're in a holds league, I'm going with Joyce because I think there's going to be more holds opportunities there for him. I think with Bachman, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he threw 47 pitches his first time out and then 11. I think he'll probably settle into some like one kind of a long man role for them, which might not have much opportunity for, you know, saves or holds, but, there could be some, yeah, he's got some interesting, he's got a good slider, pit and sinker, you know, he's got a good pitch mix. It's just what's the role going to be. And yeah, I thought he was going to get called up to be in the starting rotation to, you know, they have a couple questionable pieces at the back end of the rotation right now. So, I think Joyce is the safer holds option just because of the role. He's always been a reliever, and yeah, I still have, you know, everyone's hyped up about him, and I get it. He throws 105, but it's just, you know, he walked 13 guys in 15 and 2/3 innings this year at Double A, and he's thrown a total of 82 innings in 6 years. It's just, you know, let's just just be careful. But like there's obviously a ton of upside there with, you know, his stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he averaged 101 miles per hour on his heater in his debut, and that was pretty incredible. Definitely big fastball. I think he's got the clear better skills, and we'll probably have the more immediate success. But yeah, you're right about the control. So we'll have to see him keep the ball in the zone, but definitely a guy that could quickly become a household name just with how hard he throws. But we've seen guys that throw that hard not have success, namely Jordan Hicks in St. Louis. Throws super hard. He's increased his velocity this year, and he's gotten worse. So I think it's really important to get the ball in the zone. Velocity isn't everything. And considering he threw his fastball like 90% of the time in his debut outing, there's a bit of work to do. But both of these guys are super young. I think they've got bright futures. Whether or not that happens this year is yet to be seen. Joyce is just 22, Bachman's 23. So I think it's fun having this youth movement in the Angels pitching staff, but whether or not it's going to be successful, only time will tell. We also had another young guy get called up, and that's for the Braves. AJ Smith-Shaver was selected from the minors as well. And this is a guy who's flown through the minors, and he's put right into the bullpen, which is interesting because he came up as a starter as well. And I don't know much about him, but I know that he's just flown through the minor leagues this year. I mean, he debuted, I think he was drafted in 2021, and he's already about to make his major league debut. Is this somebody that ends up being fantasy relevant? Like, I know they've got Iglesias there, but it's... They have so many options in that bullpen, but it doesn't seem like anybody really stands out, especially with Minter struggling so much.
Yeah, there's definitely a path here. And when according to scouting reports, he's got two really good pitches, and so that checks out as a potential relief ace for I don't know, because I think Minter has been bad, but he's been a little unlucky, and I don't think they've lost faith in him yet. And Nick Anderson's been pitching well. It's gonna be interesting to see how they use him, because I think there's a, just kind of like with Bachman, there's a chance he can be a long reliever, or I don't think he's like the type of impact arm like Strider was when Strider started out in the bullpen for them last year, but I think he could be a multiple inning weapon for them, who probably doesn't really, doesn't give you a ton of value in holds leagues, but it's something to definitely keep an eye on with how well he's pitched this year. I mean, he has been dominant at every level, and they're confident enough that he can, keep getting outs at the major league level after, just 2 years in the minors. So we'll see, but I was tempted to put him on the list. I just don't know. That rotation is also, a little dicey at the moment with Schuster has been pitching better, but he, didn't really look good to begin the season. Is he going to stay in there? Soroka coming back. So yeah, it's someone to keep an eye on. I don't think it's an immediate ad, but obviously if you're in like dynasty leagues, he's worth rostering there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. And I love these guys that can go multiple innings. Super great in points leagues, always really good in my home league where starts are limited. So that's somebody I'll be watching, especially because, like you said, he was so incredible in the minors. Through high A and double A this year, he had 5 starts there. He did not give up a run across 21 innings. And then across 12 innings at triple A, he had a 3 ERA, and he was striking out a lot of batters as well. And he is he's the team's number 4 prospect according to MLB Pipeline. And the craziest part, if you thought Bachman and Joyce were young at 22, 23 and 22 respectively, Smith-Shaver is 20. So he's got a lot of room to grow. I'm sure they'll take it easy on him this year, but it'll be interesting to see what he looks like in his debut. I'd love to get some StatCast numbers on him.
For sure.
Yep. And then we had a few of some returnees, mostly minor guys, not anybody that's going to shake things up massively, but some interesting re-additions to major league squads. And that's Keegan Aiken of the Orioles. He was recalled from the minors. He was demoted earlier this year, but he was actually pretty solid in AAA. We saw Luke Jackson get activated from the 60-day IL with the Giants. He had Tommy John surgery, and he is now back. And then Tommy Conley of the Yankees was activated from the 60-day IL as well. He had right biceps tendonitis. So it's cool to see all of these guys back for different reasons, but who do you have the most interest in safe plus holds leagues?
Definitely Conley, especially with the Yankees bullpen being a bit in shambles with multiple injuries and but he's another one of those. He's always injured. There's a lot going on there. The bicep tendonitis is scary, and he had a couple setbacks, and he made it through his rehab. Hopefully he's okay. But I think he's worth a shot if you're, I think I put him at 25 today, inserting him back into the holds list. There's definitely, if Clay Holmes continues to be, Jekyll and Hyde, there's a chance Conley could be the guy they turn to. They trust in a save role. So he's not, someone to just completely forget about in save leagues, where the other two, I don't think, Jackson's, it's nice to see him back. He's had some success. I don't know where he fits in with the Giants bullpen right now. Mm-hmm. Aiken, it's another, that's a tough, bullpen to get into the saves and holds mix in. So not too much interest there. But yeah, Conley, definitely someone to keep an eye on if he's healthy.
Yeah, agreed. I think for Jackson, he was pretty interesting. I think it's easy to forget how good he was before he had surgery, because he was pitching on a team with such a deep bullpen, and we haven't seen him since 2021. In 2019, he struck out 34% of batters, and in 2021, he had a sub-2 ERA across 63 innings, so he's definitely got something in his arm, and he's still pumping 95, even after returning from Tommy John surgery, so there's that. And then Keegan Aiken, like I said, got demoted to the minors, but at AAA, 7-inning sample size, but he struck out 59% of batters. So, I think that's pretty notable, especially for a guy that never really was a big strikeout guy. I doubt that carries over, but it's good to see him sort of go down there, get his head right, and get back. I mean, he was definitely a guy that was rostered in a lot of holds leagues last year, so I wouldn't count him out. He's a PLV darling as well, so definitely somebody to at least put near your watch list, put on the watch list for your watch list right now. But yeah, that'll wrap up our news and surrounding the injuries and transactions for relievers. And before we head over and look at the guys that are rising and falling in your closer ranks, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back on the In the Pen podcast. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham. It's time to talk about Closing Time, Rick's weekly article where he ranks the top 30 closers in baseball. And as always, we're going to look at the three pitchers that are rising up the ranks and the three pitchers that are falling up the ranks. We'll start with the positive. Rick, who's the first guy that you would like to talk about rising up your ranks?
I think no one really rose up this week. So we'll go with some of the new guys on the list. And, Liam Hendricks, obviously. Not a great debut, but just, it's great to have him back. I still, I'm not ready to write him off after one outing, obviously. It's going to take some time, but he's been a better option than, they've been using Joe Kelly, Kendall Graveman, Reynaldo Lopez at the beginning of the year, which we were high on, Keenan Middleton. I mean, they've been using all sorts of guys to close out games. So it's nice to just have some continuity here with Hendricks back. And this bullpen, if everything this could be a sneaky good bullpen. They're going to need to kind of rely on this bullpen if they want to get back into the playoff picture, probably. But there's some good pieces here. And, Middleton's a guy I definitely want to talk about later when we get into some of these Statcast numbers. So, but Hendricks, yeah, definitely glad to see him back. And if he's still out there, he's worth a look in pretty much all leagues, I would say, at this point.
Me too. I'm glad to see him back on for a number of reasons, but also it finally puts an end to all the Reynaldo Lopez hype that sort of surrounded our whole preseason and the first podcast of the year. I mean, those are fun times to reminisce on. I still remember so clearly on opening day when Reynaldo Lopez came on and was throwing 100 miles per hour, and now he sits with a 5.63 ERA. Super unfortunate, but yeah, like you said, glad to see Hendricks back. We got that continuity. We don't really have to speculate here anymore. And maybe that will bring stability to the rest of the bullpen as well, now that everybody sort of knows their role. in terms of other guys that are moving up, I think Jason Adam is a pretty clear one. We sort of talked about him with Fairbanks hitting the IL. Adam is the clear front runner to be the closer with Fairbanks on the IL. He was the closer when Fairbanks was gone, and they really actually sort of used him in a strict closer role, which was cool to see. I'm not sure if they'll do that going forward, but like you said, this bullpen is not as good as it has been in years past. It's really made up a bunch of misfits right now. I'm not totally sure he's going to be the clear-cut closer or the guy that they turn to in every ninth inning. I mean, they definitely won't. I can almost guarantee that since it's the Rays. But this is a guy that's been proven to be one of the best relievers in baseball over the past 2 years. And even if he doesn't get all of the saves, I think he'll get the majority of them. And, you know, with Fairbanks fallen, Adam's going to rise up those ranks because the Rays are actually the best team in baseball. So that's a pretty good place to be the closer.
Yeah, I agree. Once we get a little bit more, you know, sample size with usage with Fairbanks out, he'll definitely be rising up the ranks as long as he's pitching, you know, pitching well.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then we got one more rising up of the ranks. And who is that?
So this is one, you know, Craig Kimbrel. I think he moved up, what, two spots, three spots.
It's a big jump.
Yeah, it's, you know, Alvarado's getting, you know, he's working his way back. He's starting his rehab assignment. I mean, he was so dominant before he got hurt, but Kimbrel has been pitching really well lately. And, you know, is this a situation where, like, don't change, you know, Kimbrel's working out well in the closer role. Do we want to really take him out of there? Maybe Alvarado comes back and is the setup guy. Or, you know, it's a tough situation to read because Alvarado, obviously, like I said, was probably the best reliever in baseball before he got hurt. So, you know, Kimbrel's 5.85 ERA and 1.3 whip shouldn't just, you know, keep him out of that role for that reason alone. But I think we've talked about how Kimbrel's better as a closer. Mm-hmm. He just pitches better when it's a save situation, whatever reason, you know, it just is what it is at this point. And you know, he's not back to his old self, but he's got a 38.6% strikeout rate, which is good for, you know, that's top 10 in the league. His stuff's still there. It's still hanging on. So it'll be interesting to see. I want to move him up more, but I don't know what's going to happen when Alvarado returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really fair points. I think it's important to understand that, yes, the strikeouts are back and stuff, but he's not completely the old Kimbrel, but it does look like he's finally getting comfortable in that role. Like you said, he has been much better recently. Since May 9th, he's tossed 8 innings and he struck out 15 batters with just 2 walks, and he's allowed just 2 earned runs in that time. One of them coming on a solo, both of them coming on solo home runs. Mm-hmm. So I think it's cool to see him back. Really fair point that even when Alvarado comes back, if you have Kimbrel being solid in that closer role, and that's where he's best, like he's been in years past, it makes the bullpen stronger if you can use Alvarado elsewhere and just have Kimbrel as the closer. So I think that'll definitely be something to watch when Alvarado does eventually make it back in a couple of weeks or so. And I think that's fair that Kimbrel is rising. But as relievers rise up the ranks, that means others have to fall. Who's somebody that's falling down the ranks for you this week?
Ryan Helsley again. It's frustrating. It's just been really frustrating to... If anyone, you know, drafted him in the top 100 this year, I feel bad for you because he's pitching well. It's just, he's not, you know, he's just not getting saves. Gallegos is now tied with him for saves, and Gallegos has more saves than Helsley this month. It's a little bit of bad luck. I know there's been some, you know, extra inning games in there and whatnot, but it's still, you know, to see Helsley pitch better than Gallegos in the month of May, yet come away with less saves. It's frustrating if you took him in the top 100 and we're expecting, you know, 20 plus saves from him this year, because, you know, you probably should have. That was if someone said he was going to get more than 21 saves this year, and I don't think anyone would say you're crazy. So it's definitely definitely hurts what his role has turned out to be. And not only that, but he hasn't been and he's been good. He hasn't been as dominant as last year too. So it's not like you're rostering at least, you know, a dominant ratio and strikeout guy. He's just been, he's been good, just not, you know, not necessarily a must roster, you know, reliever in like 10 team leagues right now.
Mm-hmm. I think 20 saves isn't out of the question yet, but that ceiling of 30 saves that was sort of hinted at before the season definitely seems out of reach right now. Gallegos actually has more saves than Helsley right now by one, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, like you said, Helsley has really, I don't want to say fallen off, but compared to the precedent that he sent last year, it's been quite a fall. He had a 1.25 ERA last year. He's way more than double that at 3.5 this year, and the strikeouts are way down as well. The velocity is still the same, so that's something interesting, but I think they just got the book on him. His strikeout rate has fallen almost 10% while the walk rate has risen. So he's gone from a strikeout to minus walk rate of 31% last year to sub 19% this year, which that's a huge drop. And that's led to a jump in whip, which was at 0.74 last year and is up to 1.26. So just across the board, worst pitcher, not getting as many saves. It's cool that like he's at least splitting the role, because I could definitely see a situation where they were like, no, actually Gallegos is more trustworthy. We're just going to have him be the closer. But they do seem to sort of play some games sometimes where they'll bring him out in the eighth and it's like, are they using them to set up? And it's like, no, they want him to do the two inning thing. And then he sort of gets mashed in the ninth inning and then they end up turning to Gallegos anyway. So I don't know. I've been really questioning a lot of the Cardinals' moves this year. So, I mean, can sort of blame it on that. But yeah, it does seem like the book is out on Helsley. He's not having as much success as he did last year. And Gallegos is just being his normal, trustworthy self. So you can't really blame the Cardinals for turning to him too much. Another guy falling down the ranks is David Robertson in New York. While he has gotten the team's last two saves, they have been spreading it out a lot more. I mean, we've seen Adam Ottavino steal the occasional save. He's at 5 right now with Robertson at 10, but also Brooks Raley and Drew Smith come in and grab saves every once in a while. They each have one. So it does seem like things are spread out right now. We're not really speculating about Edwin Diaz yet, though we did see a report today that he's aiming for a late season return, whether that means September or August is yet to be seen. But right now, I mean, Robertson hasn't been bad. He's actually been really good, sub 1.5 ERA, but he's not getting all the saves. And that's really the only thing that's dragging him down right now.
Yeah, this article came out on Tuesday and then it's been 2 days and he's got two saves over the past 2 days. Bad luck. So, but if we want to just go back to before Tuesday, the logic was, you know, Robertson only had three saves in the month of May. So, you know, Robertson had three saves in May, Ottavino had two, Raley and Smith had one each. So it's like, you know, again, just kind of like with Helsley, if he's not the full time closer, Robertson's good. He's not gonna hurt your ratios, but it's not like a guy that you feel like you have to roster if he's not the full time closer there. But it's good to see him. Yeah, it's good to see back to back saves from him. But I don't think that means that he's just, you know, oh, he's the closer now. Ottavino's not gonna get any more chances. No, it's still gonna be, you know, Buck's still going to play these games with these two, and I think Raley will continue to mix in as well. So continuing headaches for, you know, New York Mets reliever managers are coming, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear that they are okay using him in a high leverage role. I mean, like I was saying about Helsley, sometimes they'll bring him in into the eighth, but they're looking for the two inning save. But when Robertson comes in the eighth, he's just setting up for somebody to pitch the ninth. And like, that's fine. I think they know that Robertson's their best closer right now and they'll use him when they need him. But sometimes that's not as the closer.
Yeah. And they even did that. I mean, going back to last year, they did that with Edwin Diaz and like starting in August of last year, they started using him in the eighth and I think it was like Ottavino was closing out some games for them. So yeah, that's what they want to do, and that's going to, you know, again, create headaches for managers. But, in saves plus holds leagues, that trio, there's value from all three of them. So not a big problem there.
I think Buck's just finally learning how to become like a modern manager and use his closer when he needs to. I mean, just the whole Zach Britton thing from a few years ago, I think he's that haunts him every day probably. And he's just like, I got to use my closer while I still can. But yeah, we had one more guy falling, and it's from the same division. Who was the last guy falling down your ranks?
Dylan Floro, because he he had a rough outing in Colorado this past week, but also I think they turned to JT Chargot over the weekend for a save, and AJ Puck started his rehab appearance. You know, I was getting a little bit worried with Floro pitching. He was pitching really well in the role. I was starting to wonder, you know, is Puck going to be assured of that closer role when he comes back? But I think, you know, after that past week, after this past weekend,
that's a yes.
I think Puck should be okay. He should get right back into that role when he returns, hopefully next week. So, yeah, I guess we could also put Pierce Johnson on the down list after today and after the past week and the whole year. But what I don't really know, you know, I don't really know where they can even turn to there, because there's some interesting, like Justin Lawrence and Jake Bird are kind of interesting, but I guess it's better than Pierce Johnson, but I don't, it doesn't, you know, I wrote like it's, if it's the Rockies, they're not going to turn to those guys. If they turn to anyone, it's going to be Daniel Bard or Brad Hand. So I don't know. Yeah.
I would not be surprised if Daniel Bard is the closer next week. He's got a sub-1 ERA, but
he's not right.
ERA estimators. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not back.
He's still throwing like 94.
It'll be interesting to see how they do that. I don't know if they've been waiting this whole time because they want him to get like his confidence back, or they also see that, but I don't know. I don't think it's fair to speculate on what the Rockies are doing, because none of us have the brain capacity to put ourselves in their shoes. It's pretty all over the place, but yeah, Floro's a good call. Started off well, but you know, he's a Toby reliever. He's going to get trounced every once in a while, and I think Puck's got that job as soon as he's back on the mound. But that'll wrap up our rundown of Rick's closing time rankings. If you'd like to go read the whole piece, go over to pitcherlist.com. you can also read his weekly holds rankings, as well as his weekly save plus holds rankings, which will come out accompanying this podcast. But now we'll move forward to the meat of the show, looking at some stats. After the first 2 months of the season are through, we're like a third of the way now, which is crazy. Yeah. I feel like the season's been going by pretty fast. Maybe that's because I'm really busy outside of baseball, but it's been fun, and we've got some leaderboards to go through. Did you have one that you wanted to look at first, or should we just run down the list of what we got?
We can just run down the list. Yeah. Let's just do
it. All right. Well, I said this on the last podcast, and I said it was probably like one of the nerdiest things that I do. And it's like being obsessed with strikeout and walk percentage. Like I just love, they're so simple. I just love those stats, and that makes strikeout minus walk rate one of the best stats in all of baseball. You can evaluate hitters, pitchers, starters, relievers, anybody. And I think it all tells you all different kinds of stuff based on those guys. But let's look at these strikeout minus walk rate leaderboards. I mean, it's a who's who of some of the best relievers. Then you have a little sprinkling of some surprise names. I mean, obviously top of the leaderboard, Jose Alvarado. He didn't walk anybody before he hit the IL, but then you got some of the best closers in baseball, Alexis Diaz, David Bednar, and Felix Bautista rounding out the top four. And then at five, I think, is the first really interesting name in Joe Kelly.
Yeah. I didn't realize how good he's been this year until last week. And threw him way up the board, up the ranks, and he proceeded to give up, I think, 5 runs this past week. But I mean, he's the strikeout to walk ratio, 34.4% strikeout rate. I think 1.6% walk rate. I mean, that means he probably only has 1 walk on the year, maybe 2. It's you know, his stuff is still great. It's just, he had a ton of bad luck last year. I know we talked about it with, you know, entering the season about, you know, what relievers can maybe expect a bit of a bounce back this year. And Kelly was definitely on there. Didn't expect him to be like this dominant right now. But like I mentioned, this White Sox bullpen does have some really interesting pieces, and Kelly's one of them with, you know, with his stuff. So never been a guy to not have, you know, dominant stuff. It's just, you know, location and just, you know, being locked in on the mound.
Yeah. I mean, his stuff has always been really dominant, but somehow it's gotten even more dominant this year. He's throwing his sinker harder than ever. He's up to 98.7 miles per hour with the sinker, which is crazy because he was already like a hard thrower. And then on top of that, you're throwing harder and reducing your walk rate to a career low by so much. This was a guy who was like over 10% for his career in terms of walk rate. And now he's down under 2%, which is like the top 99th percentile in baseball. So that's really bonkers to see those paired together. So I think this is a guy that's sort of must roster in holds leagues right now. I think he's going to be up there in all the metrics that are important in those leagues. And so that's a really interesting name right there. And those four closers that we mentioned before, Diaz, Alvarado, Bednar, and Bautista, I think not much more to say about them, but it is important to say that you can trust those guys. They're going to be good all year long. And then moving down the list a little, we've got a couple of guys that are sort of breakout names. I think Brian Abreu had his breakout last year, but he's sort of continuing it into this year. And then we have guys like Yennier Cano and Mark Leiter Jr. who have sort of come out of nowhere for their respective teams and become some of the more dominant relievers in baseball. And then the list rounds out with even more interesting names. I'm going to let you take your pick on who you want to talk about here.
Well, yeah, I mean, Chris Stavinsky makes it on the top 12 of the, or top 13 in the strikeout to walk ratio because he hasn't walked anyone. So that's definitely good to see him there. Phil Maton, I mean, looking at his numbers yesterday, writing up the hold up, like he has absolutely been nasty this year. And he's was one of those guys kind of like a Paul Sewald. He throws that like that gyro fastball where he only tops out at like 89, but he just gets weird funky spin on it at the top of the zone and hitters can't hit it, and his curveball is really good. He's been, I mean, yeah, that again, that Astros bullpen is another great bullpen, and he's just, you know, he's kind of taken over as like one of the top three holds options there with Rafael Montero really struggling. But here's an interesting one here that, you know, a guy that I liked entering the year, and I think he got hurt. I think he was hurt starting the year, but he's only thrown 17 innings. And by the way, all of these leaderboards are based on at least 10 innings pitched. But so we have for the top five in strikeout percentage. We don't worry about walks right now. Alexis Diaz, Felix Bautista, Jose Alvarado, Brian Abreu and Matt Brash are in the top five. There's one other reliever that has a 40%+ strikeout rate this year. Steven Okert has a 40.6% strikeout rate this year. That's, you know,
PLV called it.
Definitely impressive. I moved him up the list. There's, again, that's another bullpen that kind of has. Tanner Scott's been throwing really well lately, and I kind of like who Oscar Brazoban as well. I know he scuffled recently, but Okert is, you know, a fun, you know, just a simple fastball slider guy, but he's always had pretty good strikeout numbers. You know, walk rate's a little high, but I'm definitely intrigued. I wonder if the Marlins fall out, you know, of the playoff race, he could be a really interesting trade target, maybe him or Scott, but Okert's definitely one of those more underrated relievers to look at, especially in deeper holds leagues.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great call. We mentioned him before the season as a guy that the PLV projections had as like sneaky good guy. And we were like, oh my gosh, where is this coming from? But okay. And yeah, it looks like it was right there. But yeah, you mentioning Brash is also pretty interesting because he's been really, I don't know, can you say unlucky? I mean, the whip's really high, but I would say that if you're looking at strikeout minus walk rate as sort of a predictor of success, he's been really unlucky. He's got a 4.5 ERA, a 1.62 whip, but he's striking out 41% of batters and only walking 8%.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to get into Sierra, XFIP, some ERA predictors coming up next. But yeah, Brash is still, he's top. Oh, yeah, he's top six with Sierra with a 2.15 Sierra, and you know the XFIP's not far behind, puts him at seventh, 2.24. So yeah, I think it's just been really unlucky for him, and every other metric just shows that he is, you know, a truly dominant reliever. And
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, Andres Munoz coming back soon. If Brash is going to be able to have any sort of, you know, holds, you know, viability.
Yeah, I mean, that bullpen seemed super deep last year with a bunch of unknown names, and now it sort of does it.
Yeah.
Like, now it's sort of like, all right, we have all these unknown guys, but nobody's really standing out as much. I mean, like, Justin Topa and Trevor Gott have been good this year, but I don't really believe either of them are going to be dominant guys throughout the year. I mean, I have a history of knowing how good Trevor Gott was. Wasn't he on the Giants? Wasn't he really
Yeah,
bad?
He was. He was their closer for a minute. Yeah.
He had four saves and a 10 ERA. Nice. Yeah, and Topa doesn't strike out a lot of guys, so I think that's a lot of batted ball luck, and then you just have, like, other random dudes there. So I feel like Brash could definitely be the number two or number three guy there, especially if they take it easy on Munoz coming back from injury. Definitely a guy to watch, especially if, you know, like you said, those ERA estimators are right. Yeah. He's going to have a good stretch going forward. But since we mentioned the ERA estimators, let's move on to those. We got Sierra and XFIP. And I think these are always the two that I look at. Sierra is skill independent ERA, and XFIP is expected fielding independent pitching. No idea how these are calculated differently. I don't think it matters. I think they both sort of do the same job. The thing is, the way that these things work is they play off strikeouts and walks. So the strikeout minus walk rate leaderboard is basically the Sierra and XFIP leaderboards. So a lot of the same names. Is there anybody on here that sort of sticks out outside of the guys that we already mentioned?
Yeah, it's interesting to see Ian Hamilton of a 2.29 XFIP when he gets back. That'll be interesting to see where he slides in. I love, you know, Colin Holderman's been a breakout holds option. 2.50 XFIP is good for 12th best among relievers with at least 10 innings pitched this year. And yeah, Keenan Middleton ranked, you know, making the top 15 with a 2.62 XFIP. But, you know, I want to, you know, Mark Leiter Jr., he ranked 10th in strikeout to walk, ranks 10th in Sierra with a 2.41 Sierra. I know Mark Leiter Jr. is having a breakout year. I don't think I quite realized like how good he really has been. And I know he's had a couple, you know, meltdowns lately, and I'm not quite sure if he's, you know, the closer of Chicago with Alzolay pitching, you know, kept grabbing some saves lately. But Leiter Jr., I mean, that's gotta be that breakout's a little bit for real, at least, because, you know, these numbers back up is what he's been doing.
Yeah, and it's not like it was just like an out of nowhere thing. It comes with a significant pitch mix change. I mean, he was like a changeup guy last year, and now he's a splitter guy. I'm not sure if that is like an actual thing where it's like, do they actually know if he was throwing a splitter before, or if it was just like a slightly small change in his in his grip on the off-speed pitch. But it has turned in a lot of success. I think the splitter this year has a PLV, terrible one. Never mind. I was about to say the splitter was going to have like a way better PLV, but I was proven wrong there. But it's still been really good. 32% CSW, that's in the 76th percentile for splitters. And then the changeup last year, which was used about the same amount of time, was also a 32% CSW pitch. So
yeah. Another thing with him too is like the you know, it's kind of not on the same degree, but like Evan Phillips' big change last year was adding a cutter to you know, to get lefties out, and that's kind of, he's only thrown at 14.2% of the time lighter this year, but that cutter addition has definitely helped against lefties as, you know, a second pitch he can use outside of the splitter as well.
Yeah, I think he would be a much bigger name if he wasn't like 32 years old and only had two saves. The Cubs are just really reticent to use anybody as the clear-cut closer there. I think there will come a time that somebody emerges as the guy there. Mark Leiter Jr., though, definitely standing out on the leaderboards for Cubs pitchers. But yeah, those are the XFIP and Sierra leaders. But before we look at some swinging strike rate leaders and a couple CSW guys and we wrap it up with who's that closer, we're going to take one more break. All right, and we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham talking about relievers, looking at some leaderboards on FanGraphs. We've got swinging strike rate leaders. This is always a fun stat because this is I feel like this is sort of like the dominant stat, the guys who are mm-hmm. the most dominant. I think swings and misses are really a good figure to measure somebody's dominance. I think CSW sort of does the same thing. Obviously, you're factoring in called strikes, which can really change what the leaderboard looks like. But swinging strike rate is definitely an interesting one. And I think right away in the top five, somebody jumps out, and that's Brock Stewart.
Yeah, that's a very interesting one that, you know, I didn't really become aware of until last week or the week before, but you know what mm-hmm. what he's been kind of able to do. That's, I mean, I haven't heard that name since he was on the Dodgers back, you know, you know, as like kind of like an up and down starter fringe guy. So yeah, that's an interesting, the Twins have kind of been a bit of a, they've been able to, you know, make some interesting like pitch mix changes, and just they've been able to get the best out of relievers in the past. So I think Stewart might be their next kind of guy that they turn into a really good reliever here. It's going to be mm-hmm. interesting to see how long you can keep this up.
I don't even know if it's a pitch mix change outside of him just throwing way faster. I mean, as a starter back in 2019, he was throwing like 92. He's averaging 97 now with his four seamer, which is a huge change. Even his cutter comes in at 93 miles per hour. He throws a slider and a changeup as well. So I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, coming out of the bullpen, moving to a new franchise. I think they helped him figure out some new stuff with the velocity. The big concern here is the walks. Clearly, he's throwing a lot of pitches out of the zone, and that's why he's getting so many swings and misses. He's getting a lot of chases, but he's walking 16% of batters. And I think once hitters catch on and they're just like, oh, wait, let's just mm-hmm. not swing, and then he's going to get himself into trouble, I think we'll see like everything come around there. But it is interesting to see him be so successful thus far. He had a really long scoreless inning streak as well, and his hometown is Normal, Illinois.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's yeah, you're right about the walk rate now looking at it, and his four seamer has a 55% whiff rate, which doesn't seem sustainable even at 97 no. miles per hour, and then looking at the heat map, it's a little bit all over the place. So yeah, it's but definitely, you know, an interesting name to keep an eye on. Maybe he can shore some things up there and, you know, lower the walk rate and start locating better with that stuff. Then it could really play up more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have a bunch of other sort of unknown names as well. As much as Brock Stewart is unknown, Taylor Saucedo might be even more unknown as a guy that I don't know. My brother the other day, it was a few weeks ago before I moved to a new house, he was like quizzing me. He was just like, oh, you don't know who these guys are. And he just like was going through the available waiver wire and just choosing the random relievers and be like, what team is this guy on? And I was getting them all. And then he said Taylor Saucedo. And I was like, I don't know. Who is that? Yeah. And I got that one wrong. But do you have anything on Saucedo outside of him being a big swinging strike guy?
Well, you were talking about random Mariners relievers who last year, you know, made that bullpen great. Here's another name. You mentioned Gotten Topa, and I haven't even thought about Saucedo until I started looking into this. I don't know, you know, the changeup's got a 53.6% whiff rate, slider has a 63.6% whiff rate, he tops out about 92. Definitely he throws from a little bit of a funky angle. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy too, is for a lefty, he's faced mostly righties and he's just been dominating mm-hmm. them. So, probably a name I'm going to have to put on the list next week and just, you know, as a speculative guy down there and see what happens. But yeah, it's that swinging strike rate is very intriguing. I think he was also, I think he was up there. Yeah, he hit, you know, 2.10 xFIP.
mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's some interesting stuff going on here with Saucedo.
Yeah, outside of the raw stuff, he sort of has everything to back it up, right? So he gets a lot of ground balls. He's at like 65%. He induces weak contact, 15% hard contact rate. He gets a lot of swinging strikes. And it's just like the only thing is, oh, he's a soft tossing lefty. But like you said, got a funky arm angle. He's got two breaking pitches or two secondary pitches. And he throws a curveball in there as well sometimes. So I think, I don't want to call him the full package, but he sort of got everything you want outside of velocity. And the way the Mariners have been able to uncover diamonds in the rough, you sort of have to trust them here. He sort of got the good luck going for the first 12 innings, which is sort of hard to like bank on, but he's got a 310 BABIP. So you can't really be like, he's been really unlucky, really lucky in that department. He hasn't given up a home run, which is likely the culprit for such a low ERA, a sub one ERA. But you know, the fact that he's getting a lot of ground balls usually means that he's not going to give up a lot of home runs. So I think this is a guy that you can sort of trust as a lower to mid tier holds guy. If you're like really scrounging on the wire in deep leagues, definitely an interesting name there that these stats have uncovered. And I think Drake Jameson is somebody really interesting as well. Sort of at the beginning of the season, we were pretty hyped. I think the whole fantasy community was hyped as sort of him being the next Spencer Strider, just moving from the bullpen to the rotation and having a lot of success. But he moved to the rotation, did not have a lot of success, and then was optioned back to the minors. And now he's back in the majors. And is he starting now? Is he relieving? Do you know?
He's in their bullpen.
Okay.
But I believe he's in like a hybrid long. I mean, he threw 59 pitches and got a hold the other day. So it's like, well, you got a hold, but 59 pitches makes me think that, you know, he's going to see a lot of, you know, long work. And it's interesting with Jameson. I think that he might be best suited as a reliever, like for the, like moving forward, but I know they don't want to give up on him yet as a starter.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys with a really good two pitch mix that I think in short spurts, you know, he would be absolutely dominant. And I think, you know, Miguel Castro has been pitching well. Chafin's been good, but, you know, I think we talked about him actually earlier in the season, Dre Jameson as a potential closer, but, I don't know if they're willing to move him up into that type of role yet. So, yeah. Another name that, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on to see what his role is over the next couple weeks. But, you know, those leagues, like you were talking about earlier, where starting pitchers, you know, or pitchers with starting pitching eligibility who throw a lot of innings, you know, they can be useful in certain leagues. So he feels like a league dependent guy right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely be somebody I'm putting on a watch list in my home league. And we mentioned him because according to FanGraphs, he is the number one CSW guy, 37.6%. Pretty incredible there. It's been cool to watch. I think he just needs to walk fewer guys and then he can sort of take off from there. But maybe it was just sort of a starting versus relieving thing.
I mean, that top 10 leaderboard is very, very interesting for CSW. Not a lot of names you would expect.
There's one closer.
Robert Stevenson checks in at number two. Gregory Soto, Taylor Saucedo, Brian Abreu, Joe Kelly, Brock Stewart, Matt Brash, AJ Puck, and Keenan Middleton at 10.
Mm-hmm. Was Brian Abreu on every single list in the top 10?
Pretty much a top. Yeah,
he was. I mean, yeah, he was on top 10 on all of the lists we looked at. Yeah, he's been pretty incredible this year.
For sure. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, anybody else you'd like to mention before we try to guess a closer?
just Keenan Middleton too. I mean, 20.3% swinging strike rate, which is third best among relievers. Great to see him. Yeah, I was really excited, really high on him kind of when he broke through as the Angels closer back in, I don't know how long ago that was, but I remember those days. And then Tommy John, you know, shut him down for a bit, but it's fun to see him. You know, he's kind of bounced around a little bit since then and kind of reinvent himself in a way this year with this changeup that he's throwing 39% of the time. Always was a fastball slider guy, and now he's gone to that changeup a little bit more. It's getting 45% whiff rate on it. It's great to see. And you know, the three pitch mix is kind of working for him, and I, you know, wonder what that bullpen is kind of busy right now, so I wonder if he can hang on to a holds role, because if he can, he's gonna move up into the, you know, higher part of those ranks very soon.
Yes, great points there. I think we definitely uncovered some unknown names and sort of announced the top closers in baseball. Definitely worth the look at this point in the season. I'm sure we'll have another chance to look at some of the leaderboards as well later in the season, as we still got 2/3 of the season to go. As much baseball as we've seen, there's still a lot more left. But before we wrap up the show, we always like to do our little segment, Who's That Closer? Sort of a little bit of Who's That Pokemon and Guess the Closer and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm going to run through some facts about this closer, lay off until the end so that the listeners can take a guess as well. But yeah, I'll get right into this. This closer played from 2002 to 2012, so he had an 11-year career. He was drafted by the Giants in the 42nd round of the 95 draft out of a high school in Colorado, but he didn't sign because he was then drafted by the Astros in the first round, 17th overall in the 1998 draft out of Notre Dame. He debuted with the Astros in 2002, but he didn't become the closer until 2004. But that began a stretch of out of 7 years where he had at least 27 saves. He was one of the best closers in baseball during that stretch. His best season came in 2004 with the Astros. He tossed 94 and 2/3 innings that year with 157 strikeouts. That's a lot coming from a reliever. He also had, I know, right? He also had a 1.90 ERA and a 0.92 whip with 29 saves that year. He's had 40-plus saves twice, once coming in 2005, another coming in 2008. Both of those years, he was an All-Star. He was also Rookie of the Year. He was also fifth in Rookie of the Year award voting in 2003. In terms of Cy Young award voting, he was eighth in 2004 and fourth in 2008. And MVP voting, he was 30th in 2005 and eighth in 2008. And he won a World Series with the Phillies in 2008, and that one might give it away. He pitched for Houston, Philadelphia, and Washington throughout his career, in which he had 7.9 baseball reference war with a 3.54 ERA, a 1.29 whip, and 225 saves, which is 44th all time. Rick, who's that closer?
Ooh, man. I don't think I'm right, but I'm going to say Brad Lidge.
That is correct.
That's correct. Okay. All right. Yes.
Well done.
All right.
Yeah. That 2004 season is crazy.
I did. That kind of threw me off. I'm like, I don't remember Brad Lidge being that. I mean, wow.
Yeah. I mean, that was like right around when Albert Pujols ended his career.
Yeah. That's all. That's like one of the bigger memories.
Yeah. Yeah, man. But he also closed out that World Series for the Phillies.
That's right. Yeah,
that's pretty memorable for me.
Yeah,
the 2008 Phillies are like that one weird team for me where I was not a fan of the team, but it's like ingrained in my memory every single player on that team.
Yeah, that's a pretty. I mean, think about it, like up the middle with Utley and Rollins and Brian Howard. Yeah, I mean, you can kind of. Shane Victorino had moments. Yeah, that's very.
I just remember that whole team. It's really weird. And the rotation was really good.
Yeah, Cliff Lee. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Brad Lidge had a pretty impressive career. It was short, but he had a real nice stretch of dominance there. Yeah. So he was a lot of fun to watch. But before we wrap things up, which bullpens or relievers are you watching this week to see if we got closer roles changing hands or just guys you want to keep an eye on?
Yeah, definitely want to keep an eye on, you know, Liam Hendricks, see how he looks in the next couple outings. The Rays, see if, you know, if Adam can just kind of lock that thing down and then run with that closer role. That will shoot him up the list quite a bit, possibly. Yeah, other than that, you know, see, hopefully AJ Puck can get back next week. I want to, you know, that kind of, once he returns, the list. I mean, who else are we missing? I guess Jose Alvarado is the other one. What happens in Philadelphia if Alvarado returns next week? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of you know, those are the kind of the two guys that are still on the injured list outside of Fairbanks, who just went on. That kind of are holding up, you know, potential rest of the season rankings here.
All right. And I'll be watching the Nationals and the Yankees. I think it's about time Kyle Finnegan loses that job, and it's Hunter Harvey time. Mm-hmm. And in New York, I think it's pretty interesting to see what's going on there. It seems like Clay Holmes is sort of taking the closer role back, but it's really hard to tell. Both Wandy Peralta and Michael King have been great this year. So I'll be interested to see over the next week who is sort of the leader in terms of closing out games there. I think they've got a really good bullpen. And somebody deserves to be getting the majority of the saves. But that will wrap up the podcast. Rick, plug your Twitter and anything else you'd like to plug.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Nothing, you know, other than saves and holds rankings really to plug. But yeah, just, you know, getting into the nitty gritty of the season right now. So hopefully, you know, these rankings start, you know, there's not going to be so much movement up and down as we move forward.
Yeah, it's really getting into the dog days of summer. Now, you can follow me at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at pitcherlist.com and crumplerbaseball.com. I'll be coming out with an article this weekend identifying hitters with changing plate discipline metrics, and I will be hosting the First Pitch podcast across the weekend as well. But make sure to tune in every Friday to the Pitcher List Podcast Network to catch the next episode of In the Pen. We will talk to you all next week.